This is Stories from the Red Zone and Gear Review. And you are listening to the Archery Maniacs Podcast.
And I was running late, and it was a whole series of events that kind of that screwed me completely over.
So I get tucked in these trees, and this storm blows in, and just ba-boom, ba-boom, you know, it's just going all around me. Claps of lightning.
Like eight bears coming to it, even after Adam shot his.
It's 31 yards from where I sit. That damn buck walked through that trail cam and gave me the bird.
After that, it just went downhill fast. I was wore out from getting in there, and I was seeing bucks, and I just couldn't get to them. My mind wasn't right. My body was telling me, no way. My mind wanted to get there, but my body was saying no.
We throw out one bugle and hear five bulls bugle all around us in different areas. So we're just like, oh my gosh.
I look up and here's these five bulls staring at me like 150 yards away up in this little opening. And I'm like, oh man, just screwed this up.
We launched an updated website at www.archerymaniacs.com. Go there and you will find Archery Maniac Taxidermy. Our taxidermy includes European mounts, hydrographic skull dips, and custom artwork, customizable video packages, packages to fit all your hunt needs, monthly newsletter. The newsletter will include success stories, failure stories, gear reviews, wild game recipes, upcoming episodes in our online series, and upcoming podcasts, and updates to our YouTube online series called Live Life at Full Draw. Alert, alert! Soon to launch our ebooks, Hunt Planner Guide, all the steps you need to plan your next DIY dream hunt, including specific questions, hunt plans, and step-by-step instructions. Keto dehydration. Make your own dehydrated keto meals for your hunting and backpacking adventures. Super tune your bow, beginner's bow tuning guide, and more. Thank you for tuning into the show, and we appreciate you checking out the website.
Now.
Let's.
Get.
Into.
The show!
In this episode of Stories from the Red Zone, John Stallone jumps on the show and he shares his Arizona sheep hunt, a long-awaited hunt that he made good on. As for the gear review, I review the Kafaru Argali bag. I hope you enjoy the show.
So, everybody, Zach Harold here. Excited to have somebody who is becoming one of my good friends in the industry, John Stallone, on the other end of the podcast, and he's going to share a couple hunting stories with us today, and starting off, I guess, with a sheep story. So thanks for hopping on, John.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. I'm honored that you consider me a friend. That's awesome. We've had an opportunity to hunt together. Matter of fact, I think I might actually share that story too. That was an interesting hunt.
It was. Man, we saw a lot of deer on that hunt. But anyways, we'll go into that one, I guess, after the sheep story.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. And part of the reason why I'm going to talk about the sheep story is because I'm working on that film right now with Trevin Stolfus of Outback Outdoors. We're putting together that film, so that should be releasing that pretty soon. So it's pretty fresh in my mind. I just went through all the footage and kind of thought about everything. And so, 2016, I drew a desert sheep tag here in Arizona, which is arguably the hardest tag to draw in the United States. I think I put in for about 16 or 17 years. I couldn't remember. And I could always go back and look, but it's either 16 or 17 years before I drew, which is still, it seems like a lot, but it's still below the max point pool, which I believe is at 22 years, for the unit that I was putting in for. So I drew, of course, I'm freaking ecstatic. I find out I was actually hunting blacktail in A zone in California. When I got the results, I had just blown a stalk on a buck, so I was kind of feeling a little shitty. Get back over, meet up with Tanner, who was my cameraman at the time, and I got a message, an alert that the results came out. I'm like, oh cool, I'm gonna check it out. You know, I'm expecting to see, you know, draw for deer or whatever. And I go in there and I'm like, no freaking shit, man. I just drew, you know, the holy grail. I just drew a sheep tag.
God damn,
I
freaking jacked.
Oh dude, I was bouncing around like a freaking retard, you know, on crack.
Forgot all about blowing that stock.
Oh yeah, yeah. I couldn't even think about blacktail. I literally, like, I went into mode. So that was in July. I literally got home and went straight out. Like within 2-3 days, I went straight down to my unit to start poking around a little bit. Anyway, so I find out, of course, my hunt's not till December. So I started going to poke around in July. I started making trips down there. You know, every couple of weeks I would go down there and poke around a little bit and scout around and see what I could find. And I was finding some good sheep. Fast forward. I also had the opportunity in, let's say, August or September to meet up with one of the game and fish officers that run that unit. And he was nice enough to take me around and show me a couple other areas. And got into some good sheep there too, got some good film, took my dad down. Anyway, so fast forward to, I want to say, October. I'm still trying to figure out the logistics, and really hard to get a hold of anybody on that, because the unit, 90% of the units occupied by a military base called the YPG, the Yuma Proving Grounds. It's basically a bombing range.
Okay.
yeah, that's basically what it is, a maneuvers range. So I've been, you know, trying to deal with them and get a hold of the guy that I need to talk to. Anyway, long story short, I find out that I am not allowed to film my hunt on the YPG unless I have an escort. So I go through the process of trying to get an escort, blah, blah, blah. Again, long story short, they can't give me an escort for the amount of days that I'm going to be down there. They cannot supply me with one. So I can't film my hunt on the YPG, which, like I said, occupies like a giant portion. I don't know if it's quite 90%, but it's somewhere between 80 and 90%. So I'm like, frick, now I'm just bummed. So all the scouting that I've done has gone out the window unless I don't want to film it. And I'm like, there's no way I'm going to go do a once in a lifetime tag, because you can only draw this hunt once in your lifetime. You can never draw it again. You're not allowed to. Not to mention, it'd probably take me 25 years to do it, and I'm going to be, you know, well into my 60s, almost 70 before I draw it. So I'm like, there's no way I'm going to do this without filming it. So I started, like, you know, crunching in some other scouting on the BLM land and some of the state land that was also part of the union. Luckily, there's sheep in there also. But not nearly as many and nowhere near the trophy quality. They still had some age class in there, and that was my main thing anyway. So I kind of switched my goals. I mean, I always had a similar goals, but I had to adjust them a bit. I had to adjust my expectations a bit. And I went from, you know, oh, I'm shooting a 160, 165 ram, do or die, you know, to I'm going to shoot something that's at least 8 years old. It's going to be with my bow, and it's going to be on camera. So, you know, a little bit about this hunt. It's a general tag, so you can use any weapon.
Okay.
And something like 94%, and again, I don't remember the exact numbers, but when I looked it up, 94% of the harvests are done with a rifle. So it's a real low, you know, not success rate, but, you know, not so many people try with the bow. And I'm like, so for me, this is the hunt. This is the trophy. The trophy is getting it on film, harvesting a mature ram, and getting it done with the bow. So that became my focus. That became my goal. You know, I'm gonna back up a little bit. So part of the thing about the hunt is, like, it's a once in a lifetime tag. So in your head, you start, like, really just envisioning, like, all these delusions of grandeur, like you're conquering the mountain and, you know, packing out this giant ram, and just all these things start. And with that comes a bunch of pressure, because you're like, shit, it's once in a lifetime. It's not like, hey, I just drew a good elk tag and, you know, I could probably draw this tag again in 7 years or whatever. Yeah. It's never going to happen again. There's no amount of time to pass by, nothing. I mean, I could possibly draw in another state, but in Arizona, I will never be able to do this again. And it's just like that pressure, it builds up.
Yeah.
And all these people. Yeah. So, and of course, you know, being in the public eye, it's even that much worse, because it's like, oh shit, if I fail them, you know,
yeah,
it's not just, it's not my own failure. Exactly. It's not just me having to, you know, I got, it's out there. So, And it, you know, again, you don't want to fail the experience. You don't want to fail a once in a lifetime opportunity. So it adds a lot of pressure. So there was a lot of people that when they found out that I had drawn the tag, you know, a lot of friends, acquaintances, so on and so forth, all came out of the woodwork and were like, oh, you know, we'd love to be part of it. We want to help you glass. We want to help you do this. Da, 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 da. And the intentions were all good and they were all there. But one by one, they all dropped off. And
of course,
the hunt,
fuckers.
Yeah, well, you know, how it is, man. It's and I don't blame them. It's just, how do you take off of work? It's hard to take off of work for your own hunts.
No, it's hard to
get away and say that to your wife, hey, I'm leaving. But then to go around and spend money and, you know, potentially not get paid from work and give up some of that that equity that you have with your wife to go on your own hunts, you know, and so on and so forth. It's tough. So I wasn't mad at all, but it started feeling really gloomy, and I spent a lot of time out there alone. And this place is like, it's pretty desolate. It's like very eerie feeling, and you're out there and just, you don't even know how things can live out there to begin with. But it felt like, oh my God, man, this awesome thing that I'm feeling about having this tag is starting to feel not so awesome anymore. And it really wore on me. And, you know, I got down to the wire, and the hunt was about to show up. And one of my good friends, one of my closest hunting buddies, and consequently works for me, he's one of my guides, he's like, I'm gonna come with you, I'm gonna do whatever I can to get off, and I'm gonna come with you. So he came, and my long time, and that's Jake Dahmers, and then my long time friend and cameraman Levi Paul stepped up too last minute. He's like, and that was the other thing, everybody kept backing out for me on the camera thing. And I was like, you gotta be shitting me. This is like not happening. So, and Levi.
Holy
yeah.
shit. So let me get this right. Yeah. Like, here you are. You literally have your once in a lifetime tag, and you find out that the cameraman can no longer go, the people that were going to help can no longer go. And on top of it, unless you are basically with a guide / escort, you can't hunt 80 to 90% of your unit. Like, holy shit.
Yeah. Wait, it gets even worse. So they invite me down. I made really good friends with Fishing Game. They invite me down to meet up with them. They had to do, they were going to do a flyover, and they did a flyover in, again, I don't remember if it was October, maybe November. It was a month, month and a half before my hunt. And I met them after they did the flyover, and they told me what they've seen. And they were saying that unit wide, the population was down 30%. I was like, you gotta be shitting me. So it's like everything. I mean, that part really didn't bother me too much, because I already had put eyes on a lot of rams, a lot of sheep in general. So I wasn't too concerned about it. I mean, but you don't ever want to hear that. You don't ever want to hear going into a hunt that the population in the unit's down 30%, number one, and number two, you know, for your hunt, but then also for the thought of, you know, other species and the, you know, livelihood of that species in the unit. But anyway, so the hunt shows up, good buddy of mine, John Bingham, steps up and he's like, hey, listen, if you need, cause I was having a little issues with my truck too, on the suspension. He lent me his, side by side. So we towed that down. We get down there. And I don't know if Jake's going to want me sharing this, but you might have to edit this out. We get down there and we're on the YPG and we're signing in. Okay. And they arrest Jake.
What the fuck?
This is the day before the hunt. They arrest Jake. They detain him. And I'm like, what the fuck? Anyway, it turns out he has a speeding ticket or whatever. It was a traffic ticket that turned into a warrant for his arrest because he never took care of it. Well, we finally get all that cleared up. And just in time for the next day, because I basically bust him out of jail at like 9 o'clock that night. And yeah, my son just walked in the room. Sorry about that.
Man, I don't care. If he wants to share part of the story, he can. It's
okay. He was in his mama's belly when that happened. Now we finally, day one, we know we're getting started, and we get out there. And literally the first hour or the first morning, I found a really deceiving sheep. He had a really good long curl, and I stalked in on him. I got to 56 yards. I drew back and I let down, because once I got a really good look at him, like, you know what, this is not, he's just not an old, he's a pretty decent scoring sheep, but he's just not, doesn't have the age. So I let down and I let him go. You know, so right away, all that crap that went on leading up to the hunt just went out the door. You know, hey, we're going to get this done. You know, that's where my brain went. You know, I started feeling really good about everything. I had done a bunch of scouting in this lower country that was close to the Colorado River. So I said to Jake, I'm like, listen, we should go check out over here that for the afternoon. And we went over there for the afternoon, and you know, now I'm feeling good about everything. I'm, you know, we got on a sheep already, got it within range. I could have killed him. So we get out there, and the bad luck continues. I'm driving John's side by side up this hill, and it's a four seater, and it's only a 500cc four seater, and like, I don't know if it just didn't have enough power, enough torque. Anyway, I kind of lost it, and it was real like loose and whatever. Again, long story short, I basically almost rolled this thing down the freaking ravine. We jump out. I have to call my buddy, Chad Roberts, to come help us with his Jeep. He gets over there, and we kind of dig it out of the rocks. And, you know, it didn't fall or anything, but it started sliding down the hill. And, you know, if we would have tried to move it on its own power, it would have kept on sliding. So we just parked it, waited for him, and we manhandled it into place and winched it out. So I'm like, man, now I'm like getting to the point. Oh, like, Jesus, can anything else go wrong at this point? And, you know, on top of it all, I got some crap going on with work at home, and it's December. So my wife is, even though she's like, I give you the pass for the, you know, the whole month if you need it. I know this is a once in a lifetime tag, but inside I could tell she really was just like, I want you home now, you know? So I'm just like, all this pressure is just still sitting there over my head. So I'm like, all right, next morning we get out there. Oh, excuse me. Let me back up a little bit. That night, from a long ways away, I glass up a big, big ram. And I believe it's this ram I call Old Yellow, because he had these like really yellow horns. And anyway, I glass him up. We put him to bed. Very next morning, we get in there and really, like, in the dark, I glass him back up, just laying there, and pretty much still in the same bed he was the night before. So we get in there, and yep, there he is. And we get closer and get to a spot where I can, you know, size him up and really look at him and make sure it's the ram that I think it is. We get in there, and sure enough, it's him. But now he's going up and over the ridge. So he goes up and over the ridge. We make a play on him and get into position. We pick him back up for midday. And I eventually make a stalk on him and the two other rams that he's with. I get to about 30 yards. He's just over the other side of this, basically just a brushless cliff. I'm going to call it. It's more like a ridge. And I come to full draw, and I start walking at full draw, because I know as soon as I pop over, he's going to be right there, and I'm going to have a couple seconds to make a decision. Well, I come over the top, and he busts out and runs down and across the drainage from me, and he stops. So I let down, I range him, and I draw back again, as I draw back again, he runs up a couple of yards and stops again. And now at this point, the wind's whipping like hell. I don't have an exact range on him. And in my head, I'm thinking 75 yards. So I end up letting down and letting go, because I don't want to wound this thing. You know,
yeah.
I'm like,
I get that.
You know, I've made harder and longer shots before in my life, but this is not how I want to be. You know, I want to do this. I don't want to be remembered taking a crazy shot at a once in a lifetime and a desert sheep to boot. So anyway, I let down, let him go. And I'm just like freaking pissed off. But at the same time, I'm super happy because we found the sheep that I want to hunt. Fast forward to the next morning, we get in there, and Jake actually glasses him back up at first light, and he is with like 40, maybe 50 other sheep, rams, yeah, and ewes, and they're just bedded everywhere. It's just a landmine field of eyes everywhere. So I take off after him, right after first light, come up with a plan to come up from underneath him. The day goes by. Fast forward, me and Levi had dropped our packs somewhere along the line in this drainage, and I'm trying to remember about where it was, probably about three quarters of the way to where we were, got to him, and we got to this one spot, and we were basically pinned down, and we were there till I want to say about 1 o'clock. So I'm sitting there No water, no food. We're just sitting on this, just waiting for the situation to happen. So this ram, Old Yellow, he's starting to feed off. And another big ram comes over the top and kind of joins the group. And now I got a radio bud in my ear, and, you know, Jake's telling me all this stuff. And he's like, oh, hey, there's another ram. I think he actually might be bigger and older than Old Yellow. And, you know, so right now you have two rams in play. Anyway, again, fast forward another couple hours goes by, and Old Yellow keeps moving out of the picture. But this other ram keeps moving down, actually closer to me. So it's about, I don't know, 3 p.m., 4 p.m. at this time. And my buddy Chad shows up to meet up with Jake. And Chad's dad had met up with Jake earlier. And he gets over there and he starts snapping pictures through his phone. And I have no cell phone service, but we're talking, you know, through the radio. And he's like, listen, Chad said, I'm going to come up that cut that you guys come. Just meet me halfway. I'll bring you guys some water, yada, yada, yada. And I want to show you these pictures. So we go down, we meet Chad, and he shows me the picture. So now I can see on a photograph how everything's kind of laid out, where all the sheep are at. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that Levi and I were sitting probably, I don't know, 40, 50 yards below these sheep this whole time. We had no clue. Because Jake couldn't see us because we're down in the thing. All he could see is the sheep. And he knows, you know, where we were going, but he didn't know exactly where we were at. So now I got Chad in tow and Levi in tow because Chad's like, I'm just going to come with you. So, boom, we all go, get to the same spot, crawl on our hands and knees, and I come around this edge, and I peek over, and I can see the sheep. And I'm like, oh, shit, they're right there. You know, they're like 40, 45 yards away.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, now I'm like, okay, so it's on right now. And at this point, I still haven't seen the sheep. Like, it's not like I compared them side by side to him and Old Yellow. I just, you know, always going by what Jake had told me. And, you know, I saw the picture, but it was, you know, a crappy, it wasn't great quality of a digiscope. So, anyhow, I get there, I hand my rangefinder to Chad. I'm like, listen, just stand up behind me. I ranged them up myself first, but I said, stand up behind me just in case we have to make a, you know, an adjustment shot. So I slowly come up, I get the full draw down low, and I stand up, and he gets startled, but he didn't really see me. He just saw some movement, and he jogs up the hill like from about 45 yards to about 52 yards. And he stops. And he's not even looking back at me. And I just let one go. Hit him, goes about 5 yards, and just rolls down the hill. And it was like, everything was just crazy. Here it is, you know, day three, and we got a sheep down. So get over there, and I get to the sheep, and I'm almost embarrassed to say this, and I look at him, and I'm just disappointed. And I'm like, he met all my criteria. He was, I think, Fish and Game aged about 9.5. So he met my age criteria. I got it on film. I did it with a bow. But I was mad at myself. I wasn't disappointed in the sheep. I was disappointed in myself that I had all this time, and it wasn't just about the hunt. It was supposed to be about the experience of having a once in a lifetime experience, a one chance. I could have stayed down there for at least a week or 2 weeks, you know, 10 days, whatever. And had a more fulfilling experience. But because I had felt all that pressure, and I really wanted to succeed, I feel like I failed the experience, even though I succeeded with the ram that I was happy with. And it was just a weird feeling, man. And the reason why, you know, the reason why I brought up this story, it was like, I feel like guys, especially, I do it a lot. I get caught up in the wanting to harvest an animal and wanting to prove something. A lot of times, I think it is maybe, and that sometimes takes away from the experience. And for me, I feel like the experience is the most important thing. And I was upset that I squandered the experience because of the pressure I was feeling. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think that happens to, you know, I think it happens to all kinds of people, especially more and more you get into the hunting industry and everything like that. Whether people want to think of it that way or not, when you're in the hunting industry, you have to kill shit. You do, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know.
Oh, yeah.
If you
especially if you have sponsors.
Yeah, you know, if you go year after year after year and you're not killing stuff, then you're no longer going to be, you know, having sponsors or anything like that. So I completely get that adding a whole nother aspect of pressure to your hunt for sure. And then on top of it, knowing what you're capable of and going in there like, I know that I can do this, so I have to do it. You know, it's I get it completely.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think people that aren't in the industry really grasp that, like, you're under the gun to perform all the time, you know? And it's just like,
yeah, I think,
yeah, sometimes it wears on you.
Yeah, I think, yeah, from the outside looking in, it's like all sunshine and rainbows. But you know, companies are looking at you saying, okay, cool, this guy's is a good hunter, he knows what he's doing, so we're either gonna compensate him in gear or money or sponsorship or whatever else, and that's great, but then you're expected to perform good every year, and
yeah,
that's an added pressure that when you're on the outside looking in, that's an added pressure that people don't realize come along with it. You know, you're like, oh, it's so cool that you're mm-hmm. sponsored and you get this, that, and whatever, but that added pressure is something that people don't ever really realize is there until you're in the situation.
Right. Right. Yep. So that's my sheep story.
Yeah, I know, it's an awesome story. Cause I remember when you drew the tag first off. And then I remember the picture started funneling through and I was just like, I remember you going out on this hunt. And the next thing I knew, I was seeing pictures of a dead sheep, and I was like, holy shit, he already got one? Like,
yeah.
Man, that's awesome.
Yeah, believe it or not, on those sheep hunts, especially the desert sheep hunts, most people kill in the first 5 days of the hunt.
That's crazy.
Yeah. You know what? I mean, here's the thing. For me, I don't think sheep are terribly hard as an animal. I mean, if you're going to compare them to deer, the deer are way more weary, way more alert. Their senses are better than sheep. What makes it a difficult hunt is the terrain they live in. You know, but it's not, it's a physical hunt. But it's, to me, as an adversary, you know, if we're going to talk about it like that, the deer are definitely tougher to get close to than sheep. Because even during my scouting, and I did this on purpose, I kept sneaking into bow range to take photos. And there were so many times where I was just like, you know, under 70 yards and just they had no clue I was there.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Sweet, man. So, with your hunt, you know, with all that stuff going wrong, obviously that's a lot of stuff that go wrong that could ruin most people's hunt, and they would have packed it in and been done, you know. So what were some of the some of the things that you were, you know, doing or telling yourself, or kind of the driving factor behind all of it, to even with all of the negativity and people getting arrested and side by sides and trucks breaking down, like, what did you keep telling yourself to kind of keep as much positivity as possible, so that, because as you know, as soon as you let the negative in, everything goes to shit and you don't even hunt the way that you usually hunt anyways. So
yeah,
what'd you do to stay positive and get the outcome you wanted?
Well, you know that I'm not a positive person at all. You've hunted with me. I'm a negative Nelly. And the only thing, you know, when I'm faced with that stuff, for me, I've been there so many times. I love being the underdog. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think I manifest it and become, you know, and put myself in that position on purpose. So I love conquering challenges. I mean, even in my day-to-day profession, I'm constantly dealing with problems and problem solving. So it's, for me, like, I just kept telling myself, this is old hat, John. This is nothing new. This shit happens to you all the time. If I go back and look at, I mean, seriously, I go back and look at almost all my hunts. I mean, very few of them are like, oh, cool, I just, you know, that went as planned. You know, and you know, after so many, it's old hat now. Like, you just get used to brushing that stuff off your shoulder and moving on. So,
well, sweet, yeah. Man. Well, like I say, I appreciate you sharing your sheep story with me. That was, I think there's a lot of stuff in there that people could probably pick up and learn from. So I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Absolutely. That film will be out here probably in the next month or so. So,
awesome.
You'll get to see it firsthand.
Yeah, well, let me know, and I definitely share it on all my channels and stuff.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it.
That concludes this week's segment of Stories from the Red Zone. I hope you got a few laughs and maybe learned some things to do and some things definitely not to do. Now, let's check out this week's gear review. You know, I'm impressed with this Kafaru. 150 plus pounds, this thing can handle whatever I throw at it. These Under Armour fat tires are so comfortable, but it's only been 6 months and they've already got holes. I just can't get them to hold up for me. This Valkyrie broadhead delivery system hits so hard. Pass-throughs are now expected. I gotta say it, this Sitka gear is the only camo that has lasted me longer than a year. And once again, this damn binocular harness has rotated around, putting all the pressure on the base of my neck. This S4 gear lockdown sucks. Just like that, it was broke and I was pissed. I'm not here to tear any companies down, but to simply tell the truth, because my life and my hunt depend on my gear to perform. So with that, enjoy your no-holds-barred, non-scripted, no-bullshit gear review.
Now,
let's
get
into
the show!
I'm Zach Harold with Archery Maniacs, and I have got a gear review for you. So, for those of you that don't know, Kafaru makes some of the best packs, frames, bags, pockets, you name it, on the market, that are hands down more durable than you will ever need. So, in this gear review, I am reviewing the Kafaru Argali bag. So some of the features of this bag are tab loops down. So this is center bag.
tab loops down the center bag so that you can put like a spotting scope pocket or several large pockets or some small pockets or whatever assortment of pockets you feel is necessary, you can put it on this bag. They have several tab loops on what would be the side of the bag, both sides of the bag, which is awesome. The bag itself has tensioners down here for along your hip, where your hip tensioner would go. And then it's got the hooks right here to hook into the bottom of the frame. And then it's got, what this is this just goes, say my hand is the frame. This just sits over your frame and locks it in place. And then it's got an over-the-top buckle, which would hook to this buckle over here in the middle. It's got a draw cord style closing. And what I was usually doing is I would draw cord it closed like that, and then I would roll it shut like that, and that would keep everything out of the way and keep it nice and clean. It's got three side compression straps that are not across the middle of the bag, because that allows you to put your pockets there and your compression straps not be in the way. So this compression strap, this one, and this one would all go back directly to the frame. On the inside, you have loops for a chamber pocket, as well as a hook for a water bladder. And then it's got, obviously, a hole for your water bladder hose. So, the bag itself is 1 pound, 14.4 ounces. It is roughly 7,000 cubic inches, so it is a big bag. I have packed out a lot of stuff in this bag. I mean, you can honestly see the blood still on the bag. The material is 500D DWR coated Cordura, so base almost waterproof, you know, like, I have had this thing in insane amounts of rain and snow, and everything inside stayed dry. So, I don't know if they're technically allowed to call it waterproof, but it's extremely water resistant then. So that is the bag itself. What I like about this bag is that it is very spacious. I like that it has all the loops, so you can assort the pockets the way that you see necessary and see fit. And I like that it has a spot for the water bladder, and I like that it's very simple to a point. You know, if you're looking for a simple bag, then this is definitely it. However, if you are looking for organization, this bag is not for you. And if you are looking for any type of zipper, you know, some bags will have a zipper down the middle or down the side, so you can unzip it and get something in the bottom rather than pulling everything out the top. So that's kind of a downfall of this bag. However, Kafaru obviously makes tons of bags, right? So if you got the bag because you didn't want a zipper, or you didn't want, that other stuff, or you wanted it to be completely top load, then this bag will fit you perfect. But if you are looking for, you know, zipper access, a little bit more functionability, a little bit more organization, then this bag wouldn't be for you. The ease of use scale is a 10. I don't know how you could honestly get any easier than a great big 7,000 cubic inch bag. toughness scale is 10. I literally had an entire elk in this bag, and it did amazing. Do you get what you pay for? Yep, 100%. would you recommend it to a friend? I would recommend this bag to a friend if they're not worried about organization. You know, if they want the simplest top-loading bag that they can get that's going to last them the rest of their life, I would say buy this hands down every single day. Now, if they wanted organization and something along those lines, I would recommend going with something like the Reckoning or the new Muskeg or something along those lines. So the bag itself at Kafaru is Kafaru International website. Just Google them, or kafaru.net is $215. Yeah, it was a great bag for me. And I think it would be a great bag for you if, once again, you want simple and don't want to like organize things. You just want one big top loading bag. This, the Kafaru Argali, is for you. Thanks for checking out this week's gear review.
Thank you for tuning into the show. It means a lot to us.
But seriously though, I really appreciate your ear, and it would mean the world to me if you would rate our podcast. If you didn't like it, one star it. But if you did, a 5 is even better. Don't forget to comment, like, share, and hit that subscribe button. Thanks again for tuning into the show. Some other podcasts that you should definitely check out are
Eastman Elevating with Bride and Barney,
and Hunt Harvest Health with Ryan and Hillary Lambers.
Some other YouTube channels to check out:
Hardworking Hunter, Sterling's Extremes Outdoors, and Lane Walter Productions.
And a special thanks to
Maven Optics, Six Sight Gear, Dark Energy Tech, Shield Mountain Outdoors, The Outdoor Insiders, Iron Mind Hunting, Valkyrie Archery, and Gannett Ridge Sporting Equipment.